We're one short of a quorum, so hopefully as soon as we get another member here, we'll be official. But in the meantime, and we also have several authors who aren't here yet. We're hoping they'll make their way down. I'm told, though, that there's some testifiers on our last bill, including someone who needs to be back in school in a short period of time. Hattie Barnes? Perhaps you can come forward, and we can, even though we won't have the bill right now officially before us, you can bring the young ladies with you. That's fine. Yeah. Come forward, and at least we'll hear your testimony, and then when Representative Clark comes, we can do the official action on the bill. So welcome to the Education Policy Committee, and Ms. Barnes, I guess I'll start with you. I'll have you identify yourself. For the record, we do tape these proceedings. And then you can give us your testimony, and then the young women can also do the same.
Okay.
So welcome.
Thank you. Well, thank you very much, and we're very pleased to be here. We would just like to share with you some testimony around what we know and have learned about fragrance over the last, I guess, decade, and to ask you to honorably consider doing what we need to do for the health of the students in K-12. And I'm Hattie Bonds, and I've been a public school administrator for 19 years in Minnesota, and I have actually taught over three decades in public education, K-12. I have witnessed the rate of asthma consistently growing in the city schools and throughout our nation, which has troubled me for the past 10 years. As I began to see more and more students become affected with asthma, breathing problems, and other respiratory disorders, I have really begun to get on a bandwagon of trying to really do something about it and rallying the students themselves, the troops, to help us do this. So this is the origin of what we're trying to do here today, is to say that we want to start a great education campaign to at least let people know that this has become a really major health risk to have fragrances in our schools. It also impacts learning for students. I can remember and give you one example of a student who told me, "Mrs. Bonds, I can't breathe, I can't learn in that room because one of the staff teachers had on some fragrance." And I had to basically ask that individual to respect that aspect of that student's health. She had very severe asthma, and the teacher did. They were very, very cooperative. And so it's that kind of incident that I'm referring to. So if we could do a pilot project and then really get people educated on those kinds of things, I think that would help all the kids in the learning, because you can't learn if you can't breathe, and you can't really live if you can't breathe. You're dead. Asthma is killing people. And so I would like to have Cassandra. This is Cassandra Morgan. Cassandra Morgan has been working on a project, and she's a junior in a Columbia High School. And she's been working on a project that she's learned a lot, and she can tell you a little bit about what she's learned, because you were so gracious to give us this time. I want to make it really quick and ask them to be quick. And then I have Lenore Gray. She's a senior graduating out of high school this year. She also worked on a project with us called Healthy Youth Legacy. So, Cassandra, would you?
Terrific. Welcome, Ms. Morgan. Why don't you start out by just stating your name and then give us your testimony.
I'm Cassandra Morgan, a junior at a high school. Basically, all I did was research chemicals and find out what harmful chemicals were in from shaving gel to perfume, all type, anything with fragrance in it. Then I made a poster with all those things, brochures and things like that, to show what the side effects were, like irritated eyes, irritating your nose, upper respiratory problems, problems with your lungs. Some of them had carcinogens in them, which caused cancer. And that's just a few things I found on the internet and things like that. I basically just did public speaking for a founder's day event that we had to report back to people what I had found out about, like, the things that are harmful. There's, like, millions and millions of chemicals in, like, one perfume, you know, that has, like, harmful chemicals in everything. So that's basically what I found out.
Terrific. Thank you, Cassandra. So you found lots of different chemicals that make up a number of different chemicals and different fragrances and different perfumes. Have you experienced, fellow students in classrooms that have had difficulty with...
Yes. At my school, I hung a sign that I had got that shared the fragrance and shared the air, tried not to wear scented products, and I found a girl that... We don't really talk, but she was telling me about how she gets real bad headaches and can't, like, you know, get migraines, like, if people spray perfume or put on lotion with perfume in it or, like, the fragrance smell. And a girl was spraying perfume, and she actually had to leave out and go into the commons because she couldn't breathe.
Okay. All right. Thank you. And, Lenora, why don't you start by stating your name for the record and then tell us what you have to say.
Hi, my name is Lenora Gray, and I haven't really been working at this as long as Cassandra has, but I do attend meetings called, it's a program called EGM with Ms. Bonds from my school, and I have learned some of the harmful effects that it does have on, like, children. I know that you can have, like, such things as birth defects and, you know, skin problems and babies, like, children can be born with, you know, health hazards. So I feel that as a, you know, a teen of Minneapolis public schools, I feel that there should be a ban or a fragrance-free ban in Minneapolis public schools due to the fact that it's causing all these problems, all these birth defects, and all these health effects. So that's basically it. I just feel that there needs to be some type of ban or our pilot project. You know, we need to start that and, you know, get that off the ground so we can get it around to, you know, other Minneapolis public schools that this is what's going on. They know, you know, this is the problems that are causing with schools and, you know, homes and stuff like that.
Okay. Well, thank you. And I saw you nodding your head when I had asked Cassandra if you know, personal experiences. It sounds like you know some students who have had personal difficulties with that they think is attributed to fragrances.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Ms. Bonds, we're not going to move the bill because we need to have Representative Clark here to do that, but we know that you're on a tight time frame, so we want to make sure we heard from you and from the young women as well. So we will come back to this later. But I do know from just reading a little bit of research that asthma, and not attributing where it's coming from, but asthma is a particularly growing issue in our public schools. Mm-hmm. Is that, I think you testified to that earlier.
We don't know what that is, but we know that the American Lung Association has said that it does trigger asthma attacks, fragrances too, and other chemicals, household products as well.
Okay.
So it is something, it's a small thing that we all can do to help, and as well as the Boston Physicians Association, they've really done a lot of work around learning disabilities and special needs students. It's linked to autism and really a whole myriad of illnesses. There's a whole growing population of environmental illnesses that are attributed to some of the chemicals, you know, that we use in fragrances. And some of those same chemicals, unfortunately, are used in pesticides and those kinds of other situation.
Okay, thank you. And have you had any opportunities to discuss any of these issues with your local school board at all?
Yes, actually, the Minneapolis Public Schools, we have in the teacher's contract, I believe it's on page 160 or 260, that it's a statement in the teacher's contract that says, and it's voluntarily, that these fragrant products are known to be allergens to many people, so please refrain from wearing them.
Okay.
So there, and I worked on that committee with the Teachers Federation along with a couple of other people, Susan Breedlove, Lynn Norgren, and we had a committee, and we were able to do that about 5 or 6 years ago. So this is another step in our journey to try to protect those who are chemically sensitive or have asthma, breathing problems, or really just respond and react to fragrances in a way that makes them ill.
All right. Thank you. Members, are there any questions? I don't want to do questions on the technicalities of the bill because I think that's for Representative Clark.
Yes.
Are there any questions for Ms. Bonds or for Ms. Morgan or Ms. Gray? All right. Well, Representative Dietrich.
Yes. Thank you. Mr. Chair, to the testifier, Have you gone to the school board and asked for one of your schools to become a pilot site for fragrance-free school yet?
Ms. Fox.
I have not done that. There was a project where an outside person that was working on some things or doing some consulting. I was the head principal at a school, and pretty much you could do that as head principal. I was able to do that and test that. There was a teacher there, and I have become chemically sensitive. So with fragrances with me, it really enables me to be able to breathe too. And it is something that just developed on me in the last few years. I never had it up until recently. But I always tried to protect those who had asthma, and now I have this problem. However, I was able to do that there myself. It was not a board-directed kind of situation, but as a head principal, you can do projects like that. Particularly, it is an ADA situation, so the Americans with Disabilities Act, they do require that you accommodate people reasonably who have this. And so I did have a teacher who requested that, and she also had really serious problems. And her name is Betty Brown, and we wanted to make sure that she was being accommodated as reasonably as well. So we actually did do a pilot project in one school.
Thank you.
All right. Well, Ms. Bonds, thank you for your time and your testimony. Cassandra and Lenore, you do a terrific job. So keep up practicing those public speaking practices. You've done a fine job of presenting your case here today. We really appreciate you taking the time to be with us today. Thank you, Ms. Bonds, and thank you, Ms. Morgan. Ms.
I really appreciate you allowing us to do this, but they have part-time jobs, and they don't want to lose them.
That's right. All right.
Thank you.
Thank you. Members, next, and actually we do have a quorum now, and so we'll be able to officially move. Representative Dietrich, I'm wondering if you can make a quick motion to adopt our last sort of minutes from March 20th and March 22nd.
So moved.
Representative Dietrich moves adoption of the March 20th and 22nd minutes. Any discussion? All in favor of that motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Representative Gladling, Senate File 13. And while Representative Gladling goes up, I'm going to embarrass my son, who's here with us today. He's the handsome guy with the short hair in the front. Head on. There's no school today. There's parent-teacher conferences. And next to him is my niece, Evelina. And next to her is my nephew, Michael. And in that front row is their good buddy, Adrian. So. Representative Gladling, I thought it would be a good education for them to be here since they're not in class today.
Mr. Chair, I'm sure they are very smart students, given their relative at the head table.
Motion, all in favor of the motion, say aye.
Probable English.
Mr. Gladling, do you want to move your...
Mr. Chair, I would move Senate File 13 to be, to go to the General Register.
I believe that's right. Representative Gladling moves Senate File 13 to recommend the pass and refer to the General Registry. Representative Gladling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And members, this is a resolution memorializing Congress to cough up the 40% of the funding for special education, which, of course, they promised back in 1975 when I was a teacher and have not delivered even half of it. And the other point of note on here is down there on lines 2.7 to 2.9, which says that the federal maintenance of effort requirements should only apply for state appropriations and not local. So I think that's important as well, because if locals have to fill in what is not funded by the federal government, it shouldn't count towards maintenance of effort. And I'm not going to ask for any testifiers because I think this is apple pie and motherhood, Mr. Chair.
Professor Gladling, we certainly have spent a lot of time in this session struggling through the difficulties that the unfunded mandate part of the federal mandate has caused our state. I think Minnesotans embrace the need to provide special needs, but we also want to hold our federal government accountable for the promise that they've made in the past. Are there any questions? Representative Dunham.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Greiling, you know, the cough-up part, I think if you put that in, the memorializing, you might get a little more attention on your... so you can do a more... I like the terminology. I just had to say that. I'm sorry, Mr. Chair.
Is there anyone who wishes to testify in the audience on this bill? If not, then Representative Graham will move her motion that Senate 513 be recommended to pass and referred to the General Registry. All in favor of that motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Representative Greiling, House File 258.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Another resolution. I would move that House File 258 be recommended to pass and referred to the General Register.
Representative Greiling moves that House File 258 be recommended to pass and referred to the General Register. Representative Greiling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, this one I think is another one that we can all support, and I'm taking this, the that other one was the Senate file, but the Senate, I believe, has passed this resolution, and this one is, it is actually the form that they already passed. I introduced two bills on No Child Left Behind, and some of you may have signed on to the earlier one, and this one I introduced so we'd also be in sync with the Senate for expediency. And, of course, we all support the goals of No Child Left Behind, the devil's in the details. And this one, as long as it's up for reauthorization this year or next year, just points out again that it's an unfunded mandate and that... the legislative auditor has shown us that if we keep on our current path by the year 2014, conservatively estimated 80 to 100% of our kids will, of our schools will not be making adequate yearly progress. So to ask for more flexibility, more funding, and then also have them reconsider the 100% expectation of all students making this cut. And that, Mr. Chair, it's a pretty simple amendment as far as compared to the one I initially introduced.
Are there any questions for Representative Greiling? Representative Schroeder.
Just have one comment. On this one and the last one, I would love it if we could charge an interest on the money they owe us.
Is there anyone in the audience who wishes to testify on this bill? And Representative Greiling, I think there's actually a more and more meeting of the minds on this issue. You and I have ventured into NCLB things over the past few years. We haven't always agreed, you and I, but I think the further that we delve into this and understand the deep ramifications of this federal mandate, whether it's a good or bad, it is the details issue that we are beginning to struggle with in a more realistic way, and so I think this is a very appropriate posture for us to take. If there are no further questions, then Representative Greiling renews her motion and House File 258 be recommended to pass and referred to the General Registry. All in favor of the motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Greiling. Mr. Greiling, I've been told that the Senate companion to this is in the Senate Rules Committee. Representative Tilbury, House File 1319. And Representative Tilbury, it's appropriate for you to make a motion at this time.
Thank you, Chair. I'd like to make a motion that we listen to and introduce Bill House File 1319.
Representative Tilbury moves that House File 1319 be recommended to pass and referred to the Finance Committee with a re-referral to the K-12 Finance Committee. The bill is now before us. Representative Tilbury.
Thank you, Chair. This is a great pleasure of mine to be able to bring this particular bill. I have a testifier here that I've been able to work with for the last 11 years and have enjoyed watching his work. But to give you an idea of what this bill is, it's basically a grant that allows a pilot program to take place. It merges a visual arts center, or makes a visual arts center, from someone that can provide the work behind that with the print industry, And it kind of coincides with Governor Pawlenty's pledge on using technical careers and so on, and this would be a great investment for that opportunity. And it's open to the state to apply for this type of thing. That's why we set it up that way. So we're hoping that people would be interested. I just wanted to have one testifier come in and share a possibility that could take place with this type of a grant. And to my right is Brian Hogue, who happens to be a visual arts teacher in Roseville Area High School.
Welcome, Mr. Hogue, to the committee. It's good to have you here. Please state your name for the record and give us your thoughts.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. Good afternoon. My name is Brian Hogue, and I'm one of the teachers for the visual arts program at Roseville Area High School. I'm here to testify in support of House File 1319 for a grant to establish a regional center for visual arts. Printing is currently the largest manufacturing industry in the state. According to the Department of Employment and Economic Development, 75,000 Minnesotans work in the printing industry, over 3% of all Minnesota workers. For every 100 direct jobs in the printing industry, an additional 133 jobs are created in Minnesota's economy. The Twin Cities metropolitan area is currently the fourth largest printing center in the United States. When I began teaching in 1982, almost every secondary and post-secondary program in the state of Minnesota offered printing in its course offerings. Today, there's just a few high schools and only four post-secondary programs left. There's many reasons for this decline, yet despite the decline in educational offerings throughout the state, the printing industry continues to grow. Printing is no longer a dirty and grungy old business. Today's printing industries are a mix of clean, high-tech, and heavily computer-based technologies that require employees to have a high degree of technical knowledge and adaptability. Today, the printing industry is finding itself with a major workforce shortage and is desperately seeking new workers to replace those retiring from the workforce. Even as a high school instructor, I now receive 3 to 5 calls a week from business owners looking for entry-level workers who have a good working knowledge of printing. Why is this bill so important to education and the printing industry and the economic growth within this state? The concept of a regional center for the visual arts is a partnership between secondary, post-secondary, and the industry to come together for the first time ever and to truly provide world-class education to students and adults. The center would offer a variety of career options and exploration to its students. Bringing the best technology, facilities, and staff together will make great things happen. As many as 200 students from many school districts would come to the center for highly specialized training that would give them a jump start on their career. A key component of this vision would be for students to earn college credits while in high school. Not just one or two credits, but up to a full year of college experience. For students wishing to enter the workforce upon their high school graduation, a national training certification would be offered. This certificate would assure graduating students an opportunity to make a livable wage with excellent benefits at just 18 years old. Students attending the center would also be eligible for a paid summer internship program at a variety of graphics-related businesses. The regional center would be used by high school students during the day, and then would be used as an industry training center during evening hours and weekends. Summers would be used to offer graphic arts teachers' institutes and symposiums. The facility would maximize investment and return maximum benefit. For a center like this to work, all parties involved need to be in a win-win situation. Our students need to have good-paying career opportunities. The printing industry needs a good source for new workers. Graphic arts educators need a place where they can learn about the latest technology. And industry vendors want a place to showcase their best technologies as well. Can this become a reality? Absolutely. Creative thinking, looking outside the box, and cooperation on all levels are keys to the initial success. So how is the center going to be able to stay up to date? The answer is not holding out our hands every few years when we need new technology. The center would within 5 years become a self-sustaining entity that would require no additional outside money. Can that be realistically accomplished? Yes, it's already being done with our program, and it can be done with this center as well. This is an opportunity to give all learners, no matter what their ethnicity, economic background, or educational aspirations, an opportunity to achieve success at an early age and get them involved in an industry that has played a critical role in the state's past, present, and future. I ask that you please look further into this bill that would provide us an opportunity to make such a plan a reality. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Hogue. You did represent somebody. You did have someone else, but apparently they're not here.
No, it's another person from the print industry that I had. I just wanted them to share some statistics and then be done with our test part.
Why don't we bring them forward?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. I'll be very brief. My name is Tom Lehman. I'm here today on behalf of the printing industry of Minnesota. As Mr. Hogue just mentioned, it's the largest manufacturing industry in the state, approximately 75,000 jobs currently, $6 billion a year in economic activity. It's a vital part of what makes Minnesota go and grow, using Minnesota-grown trees to be turned into Minnesota paper that's used here in for printing. Mr. Hogue also referenced the need for workers in this industry. We need skilled workers that have expertise in high-tech things such as computer graphics, layout, design, other kinds of things. Like many other sectors, the baby boomers are aging, and we need people coming in. The good news is that for high school students looking for jobs, we have them today. We need them. There are openings throughout the state. Printing is not centered just in the Twin Cities or outstate. It's a statewide industry. And if we can get students coming out of high school with those skills, we can get them into good positions with good salaries, good benefits, and allow them to start making an important contribution to the state. So we appreciate Representative Tilbury bringing this bill forward, and we highly encourage your support. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Lehman. I've attended some of the PIM annual meetings in the past, the printing industries. What's the M part again? In Minnesota?
Printing industry of Minnesota.
Minnesota. I've attended their annual meetings in the past, and it's a pretty big gathering of folks. This is truly a pretty dynamic industry in our state. Representative Grady has a question, and Representative Heigerton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a comment. It's wonderful to have Representative Tilbury here in the legislature bringing things from Roseville Area High School, and I can just sign on as second author, and he does all the work. But this is a really wonderful printing operation at Roseville Area High School. I've had a chance to tour it, and what they do both product-wise and student achievement-wise is very impressive.
Representative Heigerton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and again, my comments have to do with, it's a very good bill, but it doesn't affect rural Minnesota like it should. The bill, your idea, your concept, I love. And Mr. Hogue had talked about the standards, to some degree, receiving credit. And this year, there's all kinds of ideas. We've had FIAD trying to change the standard. We've had foreign language. And if that happens, this ain't going to happen. We need to be able to allow those electives to be taken, and that's very, very, very important. But anyways, 3% of total jobs, again, that's a lot. And again, when I look out in outstate, I talk about industrial arts and auto mechanics. But yet, this is also very important in outstate as well. There's a lot of people. I worked my way through college. I worked a couple summers at the liturgical press in St. John's, working at the printing over there, but there are a lot of good paying jobs available, and again, this needs to be taught on a high school campus. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Heigerton, and very good point on the possible mailing of electives as we move forward in some other important areas as well. Are there any other questions? Is there anyone in the audience that wishes to testify in this bill? Okay. And Representative Tilbury, in my high school, we had a print shop. We're a pretty big high school, and in a very short period of time, printing went basically from the dark ages to an incredible high-tech industry with a lot of sophistication, a lot of new competencies have been added. It's really a remarkable industry in that respect, and one that brings tremendous value added to our economy. If there are no further questions, then Representative Tilbury renews his motion that House Call 1319 be recommended to pass, referred to the Finance Committee with a re-referral to the K-12 Finance. All in favor of that motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Tilbury.
Thank you, Chair.
I don't know if we have authors in the room. I know we have testifiers in the room. And so just to keep us moving along, I'm going to ask the testifiers on House File 2008, Representative Clark's American Indian Tribal Contributions, Integrated into Student Learning and Teacher Prep, to come forward. I spot a few friends, and so it's good to have you here before our committee. We won't have a bill formally before us, but we can certainly hear testimony about your intent and motivation for this proposed legislation. There will be a delete all amendment that will be offered members, so look for that in your packets. I hope it's there in your packets. Yes. All right. Yes. Representative Dummer.
Mr. Chair, the amendment we have says just delete section one. Is that essentially delete all? I've got the 0420. Is there another one?
You know, I probably, as my understanding is, delete all, but it probably is just this page and line amendment.
Okay, I'll figure out.
Oh, Representative Clark.
Thanks, Chair.
How about that? I looked down and looked up, and there you are. I know you've got a bill up in, a pretty big bill up in committee. Representative Clark, the chair will move House File 2008 be recommended to pass, refer to Finance Committee, and I believe will be offering a referral that this move on to K-12 Finance. Representative, oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry, so let me back up. I'll withdraw my motion. Do we need to do that
today?
Where does this bill need to go from here?
I think it can go to the floor. I'm not sure if it has any fiscal. We don't think believe it has a fiscal.
We're talking about. Hold on a second. That's about 2008. Yeah. You have two bills up, and we got confused up here. It's my bad. So I'm going to remove my motion, or make a motion here. House File 2008 be recommended to pass, referred to finance with a new referral to K-12 Finance Committee.
Okay.
Representative Clark.
Thank you, committee members. I'm really proud to bring this bill before you. We have some very serious issues with the education of our American Indian children, and one of the things this bill does is to take us forward with, I think, some very good provisions to help rectify that. And we've had the advice of a very active community-based group, and we have worked with the commissioner as well to look at how we can do what we've said we've been intending to do for several decades and never seemed to accomplish in terms of American Indian education. So I'm going to ask my two witnesses here to describe what the bill does and why it's before you, Mr. Chairman.
And Representative Clark, it's probably appropriate to do your amendment at this point, so that we're referring to the language that you want us to act on. So I'm going to move the 070420 amendment, and this will put this in the shape that you want the bill to be before us. I had thought this was the delete all amendment, but we can get into that in a second. All in favor of that motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. The bill is before us as amended. And, you know, perhaps, Representative Clark, before we hear the rationale behind the bill, maybe we can just walk through what's being proposed here.
Do we have a summary? You don't have to have one. Somebody else says thank you.
Representative Clark, the summary is not going to be to the amendment.
Well, we do make that the amendment does have the required academic standards. And, Mr. Chairman, maybe I should say underlying this whole bill is the idea that we want all students in our Minnesota schools to be exposed to and learn about the heritage and the contributions of American Indian communities. And we also want our teachers to be trained to be able to carry that forward. So the first part does deal with requiring that the academic standards include the new language here that include the contributions of Minnesota American Indian tribes and communities. That's related to the academic standards. In the second section, we deal with the graduation requirements requiring that there be a number of instructional units that, again, identify the contribution of Minnesota American Indian tribes and communities. In the third part, we deal with the licensure for our teachers, that there be certain requirements that those teachers are able to teach the kinds of contributions that we're talking about, and directs the board to adopt the rules that would impact the teacher licensing. And the fourth, the Committees on American Indian Education Program is established again, and would, well, is established and would be offering, I think, very important advice to the commissioner, and there are, that's spelled out in the fourth section. And section five is the advisory task force of American Indian tribes and communities and standard-based reform. Establishing that task force, we think, is very important so that actually this legislation is effective and really will have an impact throughout our state on the, both on the schools and on the students. Mr. Chairman, that's it in brief. I'm going to turn this over to, I don't know, who wants to go first? Ms. Salinas?
Thank you, Representative Clark. Ms. Salinas, please state your name for the record and give us your testimony.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Elaine Salinas, and I am the president of Migaby Communications, which is a nonprofit organization in Minneapolis that works and provides supplemental and supportive education programming to American Indian students. I'm also an Indian educator with over 30 years of experience in K-12 and adult education in public and alternative schools across the state of Minnesota. I'm very happy to be here, and in fact, as I was driving over here today, it reminded me, it was kind of a deja vu back 30 years ago. Some of the same people, Will was one of them, we were sitting in the same committee, same time of year, and we were advocating for the passage of the American Indian Language and Culture Education Act, and this was 1977. And that bill became known as Chapter 312, and it's still part, it's still on the books here in the state of Minnesota, and it's called now Success for the Future, which is a program that provides language and cultural support to district-serving and school-serving American Indian students. But I wanted to open with that piece of legislation because it was a piece of legislation that really put Minnesota out front in terms of the rest of the country. We were the first state in the country to pass this kind of legislation that later became a model for Wisconsin, Montana, New Mexico, a lot of other places. So I just wanted to share that because we do have this strong history of support of Indian education, and we do have many, many challenges. And I would just like to very briefly talk about some of those challenges with regard to our ongoing efforts to adequately educate American Indian students. Statewide, Indian students comprise only about 2% of the state's K-12 population. But they are underrepresented in gifted and talented programs, about only 1% of the population there. And they're overrepresented in special ed. They represent about 3% of the special ed population and 5% of the suspension statewide in the state of Minnesota. Indian students statewide have a graduation rate of 64% as compared to 93% for white students. But this number diminishes or shrinks significantly when you look at the Minneapolis school system, where the graduation rate of Indian students is only 39.9%, up from a low of 18% about 6 years ago. American Indian students statewide have the lowest undergraduate enrollment rate of any group, and they have the lowest graduation rates from Minnesota four-year institutions as well. So I'm very honored today, given this context, to speak on behalf of House File 2008. I want to begin by sharing some of what I think we've learned over the last 30 years about Indian education and what does and doesn't work, and then to talk about how the proposed legislation before the committee today addresses what we've learned and incorporates this learning. One of the things that we have learned is that simply adding an Indian unit onto an existing social studies class does not work. It doesn't work for Indian students, and it doesn't work for non-Indian students in the classroom as well. And the reason it doesn't work is because those units are normally offered in history or social studies. And Indians
the contributions of Indian people to the development of this state, to the development of this country, were far broader. Indians made contributions across all of the fields, including math and science. And so we need to recognize that and demonstrate that by having Indian content integrated across the curriculums. The proposed bill does that by requiring that Indian content be integrated into the content standards in all academic areas. That's a very, very important piece of this legislation. Another thing that we've learned is that while the inclusion of Indian content is essential, it is not sufficient. And what I mean by that, and what anybody that has worked with Indian students in schools knows, is that there must be a corresponding changes in teaching practice so that teachers are able to integrate curriculum and able to really respond to the cultural learning styles of American Indian students. The proposed legislation addresses this by requiring that teachers both at the pre-service and in-service levels receive instruction and training in how to work with Indian students and how to integrate curriculum. That's required as part of licensure requirements for pre-service teachers and as part of continuing education requirements for teachers in practice. Another thing that we've learned is that over the years is that we can present a very clear profile of the failures of Indian education. I just shared with you some of the statistics. But what we are less familiar with is what works. And there are pockets within the urban school system in Greater Minnesota where there are things that are working. And so what we need to do is we need to find those pockets where things are working and we need to bring them to scale so that Indian students throughout the state can experience a more positive, more successful educational experience. The bill addresses this by requiring that there be a task force established that will look at Indian education. This task force will be broadly representative of all the key stakeholders in education. It will include people from the community, it will include teachers, it will include Educate Minnesota, legislators, everybody who has a vested interest in the performance of students. And it will bring them together to really look in a very intensive way at how do we create greater success for Indian students. And then that task force will come back and report to the legislature in February of 2008. So that's another very important clause within the legislation. I think another thing that we want to point out in regard to this House File 2008 is that this legislation is not proposed just for Indian students, but it's proposed for all of our students in Minnesota. We see increasingly, and we work with students every day in our environment. We have kids coming after school, Indian kids coming from the high schools in Minneapolis. And we've had opportunity to talk to them about what they're confronting in the school system. And they talk to us often about the stereotypes. On one hand, non-Indian students having stereotypes that all Indian people are the alcoholics down on Franklin Avenue. On the other hand, all Indians get a huge check from the casino. And so on both ends, there's these unrealistic stereotypes and conceptions about who Indian people are. In our students, our young people, have to live with that on a daily basis and have to live with those misconceptions that are false. So there's a real need for our students, but also for all students in Minnesota to have a better knowledge, a clearer understanding of what it really means to be Indian and to have some of those stereotypes and those misconceptions dispelled as part of the educational process. And very frankly, sometimes our schools are the only places for that to occur. So our schools play a very important role in that regard. I want to close just by saying and sharing with you one of the things that I heard some time ago that struck a real chord with me. And this was many, many years ago when people were going around and they were doing a lot of the diversity training in education. And I heard a wonderful speaker, and what that speaker said was that education should provide all of our children with both windows and mirrors. And the windows are to see the unlimited possibilities and opportunities in the world around us. And the mirrors are so that our students can see themselves as capable of grasping those opportunities. Now, if we look at what the statistics with Indian children, the experience of Indian children in the public education system, what this suggests is that our students, our young people, have plenty of windows, but far too few mirrors. One of the most important things that this piece of legislation will do if passed is it would remedy this situation by giving our children an opportunity to see themselves mirrored not only in the curriculum of the schools, but in the practice. And that would be the first time that that has happened in our state. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Salinas. Dr. Antel, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Will Antel, and I'm a retired educator. I've been retired since 1993, except for a couple years when I went back to the Minneapolis Public Schools and headed up their Indian Ed program. I was going to go over for 4 months, and it ended up to be 2.5 years. Well, I have to tell you, that was probably the best 2.5 years that I've spent in education. It really opened my eyes of what the problems were in school systems. Prior to that, I had been a teacher in the Stillwater school systems and the Janesville public school systems. I've been on a faculty at universities and colleges around the country. And I've been in the State Department of Education in St. Paul was there for about 25 years. And so I have a lot of experience in education. But that 2.5 years in Minneapolis was really an eye-opener because of all the things that we had tried to do since 1968 seemed to have not worked too well. As Elaine pointed out, the statistics were dreadful, and I could not believe that we had not made more progress. And yet we had legislation that talked about the Indian Language and Culture Act, we had the Human Relations Law, we had federal legislation, resources available, but we still were not connecting. And as I looked up upon what was going on in the Minneapolis public schools, we had a lot of materials for teachers, but the teachers didn't know how to use that materials. They weren't trained. And so I would ask them, why aren't you integrating this curriculum into your regular curriculum? And their response basically was, we don't know how to do that effectively. We get excited about it, but then we reach a point where we don't quite know how to do it. So at least, for one respecter, House File 2008 addresses that question of integration throughout the curriculum, not just in history, but in every subject matter. And I think that's really critical part of this legislation. As I've worked across the country with various states, they're in the same kind of dilemma. They want to do this on an integrated basis, and many states are doing it. South Dakota is doing it now. Montana has been doing it for some time. New Mexico has been doing it. Oklahoma has been doing it. California has been doing it. At one time, we were way, way ahead of everybody, and I think we've fallen way, way back. And I think this bill will put us back on track, Mr. Chairman, and getting us into a curriculum that makes some sense to me. It integrates it, and it requires teachers to be trained, as well as the ones who are in the pre-service or in-service activity. So it covers really the areas that I think that we've been deficient in for several years. There's one thing that Elaine points out here very, very well, and that is the misunderstanding. Of all the work we've done, there's such tremendous misunderstanding about American Indians. There's this notion that they're being treated special, that they have some kind of uniqueness that others don't have. And it's true. It's very true. It's true because the Bill of Rights in Article 9 says so. And that little piece of, just a paraphrase of words, where it says the Congress shall regulate trade among foreign nations and American Indian tribes. That little statement has created paperwork that would stretch from East Coast to the West Coast. It's all paper. And what we need is legislation that's not just something in writing. We need legislation that is accountable. And I believe with the task force and the training of teachers, that's a step in the right direction, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Dr. Antar. As always, eloquent and passionate. Thank you for your testimony today. We have another testifier, Karen Balmer, from the Minnesota Board of Teaching. Welcome, Ms. Balmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, my name is Karen Balmer with the Minnesota Board of Teaching. I come before you today with the intention that's very simple. First, just a bit of context, and second, a word of caution as you consider this, and let me preface my comments by saying first and foremost that the Board of Teaching does not in any way disagree with the spirit of this bill. The Board of Teaching does in fact recognize the unique and critical contributions that our Minnesota American Indian tribes and communities have made in our Minnesota heritage. So let me say that first, and I hope that is heard throughout my brief comments. First of all, by way of context, we have what's called for the Board of Teaching the Standards of Effective Practice. These are the pedagogical underpinnings that are woven throughout all teacher preparation programs. If any teacher preparation program is approved in the state of Minnesota, it is only because they've demonstrated these standards of effective practice. One of those standards is under a clause called diverse learners. And that specific standard reads that a teacher must understand the cultural content, worldview, and concepts that comprise Minnesota-based American Indian tribal government, history, language, and culture. So that is currently in our standards in recognition of what I said previously of the unique contributions and importance of our Native American heritage here in Minnesota. They're the only group to be named specifically within these standards of effective practice, and I think that's important, and it hopefully communicates something about our value there. And now just my word of caution as you move forward from a policy perspective, my hope from the Board of Teaching is that we would remain broad enough to prepare our teachers to respond to the unique needs of many different types of communities. Minnesota students reflect and represent many diversities and unique situations, from war-torn countries that they've come from to homes that don't speak English, and any number of different types of settings. And so we just want to make sure that we can remain broad enough that we can address all of those unique communities. So please don't hear me as being an obstructionist perspective on this, but I just wanted to make sure that you had some context and that perspective as you move forward. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Bomber. Are there any questions for our testifiers? We do have several. Representative Udall, Dummett, I believe Representative Heidrichen, also had a question. Representative Udall.
No, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Testifiers, Representative Clark. I have a particular interest in this because for over 20 years I taught a course on American Indians to my students at New London Spicer. For part of that time, it was an elective class within the curriculum. They put me in the early morning hours. That was the drive time class, and I taught. It was called Early Bird, and I taught for quite a few years, and then the cutbacks came, and it was my early bird class was gone, and I was back teaching it in my regular classroom as part of my curriculum. And I understand your concerns about it as part of a social studies curriculum, but I felt trying to do it as much in depth as I could. I also commercial, Mr. Chairman. I have a book coming out at the end of this month, a novel on the Dakota conflict, and hopefully again have been fair in my treatment of the history of American Indians. But that said, I do have a few concerns here. The The task force, I think, is a good idea. The training I'll talk about in a moment, but this is something that perhaps Representative Heidgerken may mention as well, and has earlier today, about all the competition that we are having for basically new classes and new curriculum. So far this year in this committee, we've heard about bi-ed and vocational, agricultural education, sex education. If only there are a way to combine them all into one class, maybe it'd be easier to do it. But that's not the way it's set up. We have all these different requests for different classes, and we have a very limited time. I mean, our school day, our school year, we're going to have to look at it, certainly changing it. Now, just some specific questions regarding the teacher preparation time. Now, have you been in contact with colleges about how they would set that up? Whoever would like to answer that, please, Mr. Chairman.
Dr. Antar or Ms. Salinas? Or
I didn't catch the last part of that question.
Dr. Antar, have colleges, have you contacted them about how they would set up their... I imagine there's going to have to be an education process within the colleges. How is this set up? Have colleges been contacted? Is the idea to create a separate class? Do you anticipate a credit in this then? What is the cost to colleges to do this?
Mr.
Chairman, I just finished a six-year term as a trustee for the Minnesota State Universities and Colleges. And about 6 years ago, I asked the chancellor and his staff whether or not we could put forth a requirement that said every college graduate in our system would have a course on tribal government. Everybody said, what a wonderful idea. 6 years later, we're still talking about it. It's very, very difficult to get college universities to put something different into the curriculum. It has to almost emanate from the faculty. And maybe we started the wrong way. We started from the top down. We probably should have started from the bottoms up. But it didn't move. But yet I think that's the kind of thing that we need. We need every college graduate in this state to understand tribal government. Because it is a government, just like state government, just like the federal government. And yet we don't know anything much about it. We still have these suspicions of what it is. We don't understand where they derive their power and their authority. And so there's a lot of misconceptions. But I agree with you, it's a very difficult thing to do. And I couldn't do it from being a trustee. And so I don't know the answer to that question, but I know it has to be done. And I have to think we have to rely on some of our bright people that we have in the college university systems to bring that kind of issue forth, to get it into their curriculum so that the faculty can then move on it.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman.
Professor Verdal.
Thank you. Dr. Antel, maybe one of the charges of the task force would be to help to develop what type of education should be included. Should it be a college class? Should it be credit? Should it be part of a college class? Should it be a seminar? I think that would be a good task. You see, we hear you're saying that you're almost powerless to influence faculties to do this on their own. We can here as legislators, and we can tell the board that this is what they should do, and hopefully it would be done. But I would, the task force, I think I'd look closely at that.
Mr. Chairman, I think that's an excellent idea, and I would really, really hope that that would be an outcome that we could rely on.
Mr. Chairman?
Ms. Salinas, if they would like to respond.
I wanted to just respond. First of all, there is provision. If you look at the bill within the task force, we have intentionally included post-secondary faculty who serve as instructors in post-secondary so that they can have that kind of input as members of the task force into how we actually would operationalize this at the post-secondary level. But I wanted to go back and just comment on your opening statements about additional classes and time. This bill actually is not talking about additional classes.
I understand.
It's really talking about doing something very different, because additional classes is what we've been doing, which hasn't worked. What it's really talking about is integrating Indian content into the standards and into the core academic offerings. So it wouldn't be a teacher teaching an additional class. It's when they prepare their syllabus, them taking into consideration those contributions so that they're actually part of the curriculum of the school.
Mr. Chairman.
Thank
you, Ms. Salinas, and I did understand that, and I was going to raise that as my next point. I appreciate that it's not a particularly new class. And, you know, I like the format of being interdisciplinary with this. I actually try to do it with the Civil War. But do you have any idea how long the units should be? I mean, are you thinking along those lines at all?
Ms. Salinas.
I'm sorry. We haven't gotten to that point. But again, we're hoping that there will be the task force that will look at these sorts of things and how we best implement standards-based reform integrating Indian culture. And so I'm hoping that we've got many units. As Will said, there's a tremendous amount of curriculum already sitting out there. Indian education has spent the last 30 years developing curriculum. Now we really need to focus on integrating that curriculum and on really training teachers so that they can work more effectively with Indian students. Those are the pieces that have been missing.
Mr. Chairman, one final comment.
Professor Verdo.
Thank you, and I would like to see this move forward. This Representative Clark encouraged you maybe in that task force section to tighten up some of those areas regarding the comments I've been making.
Thank you, Representative. I'd only be glad to work with you on that.
Thank you, and maybe I'll send you a copy of my book for your review.
Thank you, Representative Riddle. Members, I've been in classroom settings with Representative Riddle, and I have to tell you, it's quite engaging when it comes to sharing, particularly Civil War knowledge and memorabilia. At some point, we'll have to talk about that hat that you brought, where you can basically store a piano in this hat. It's the kids were quite taken by it. Representative Demmer.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, actually, I was at that same one.
Yes, that's right. It was the Three Musketeers.
Yes, we were. And it was quite engaging. And the other thing I have to say about Representative Erdahl, he does a good job of getting a little promotional time, too. And you got to give him credit for that. I like that entrepreneurialism.
Mr. Chairman, I'm thinking of holding a book signing at Charlie's Cafe at Freeport.
Not only that, but he's
a politician.
Helping out Representative Heidjurken besides, I'll tell you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Question I have. I've got a couple of quick ones, but one overall. Representative Clark, it appears that you're asking that all of our academic standards in all of the review all need to be related back to American Indian tribes. Not that that might not be a good thing, but how do you reconcile that with the other the contributions that other ethnic groups in Minnesota have made? You know, we've got Hmong, we've got Somali, we've got Hispanic, we've got Norwegians, we've got, I come from Norwegian and German heritage, and there's a rich, deep tradition in my area, lots of festivals, lots of things going on. How do you reconcile going with one and not another? I mean, shouldn't we really be all-inclusive of all and look at it as Minnesotans and even Americans, as opposed to relating to a specific ethnic group with all standards in all areas of all of our academic areas? Representative Clark, can you give me some perspective on that and what your thoughts would be on that?
Representative Mariani, Chair Mariani, Representative Demmer, I'd be honored to, because I have to tell you that I have learned so much by having the honor of representing many American Indian people in my district. And I represent all the other groups that you mentioned. Probably, I know that you're in Rochester, you have some of the same folks who are new immigrants and are new Minnesotans. But I have to tell you, when you look at the origins of this country, you look at the numbers that were shared earlier about big challenges and big failures of the existing system, there's no other group of people that I think deserves to be put at the top of the list to try to rectify this problem than the original people who are here. we can go on, and we do. I hope we do go on and make sure that we cover all the others. But this is so basic. This is so basic, and we've done such a terrible job. And the contributions of this group of people are so needed, I would have to say, in this time and space. There is so much to learn from the original people that were here. And we are failing the children so deeply that this, I believe, deserves to be the first priority. I don't think we're competing to try to knock out anybody else. That's not what's going on. But we have failed, I think, in so many ways to provide a place here for the kind of learning that we're asking for here. And I think, you know, 30 years ago, people who were here before you and I were here did try, I think, with good faith, to rectify a problem that was recognized even then. We have failed. It didn't work. And so I really appreciate, that folks are willing to try again, and they've thought through, I think, in some very creative ways to work with the existing program. I talked with the commissioner. We actually had, a lot more detailed path that we wanted to go down. And she really said, why don't we work with the existing timetable? So that's what's reflected in here.
Professor Demmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I guess with all due respect, I think when we start, and I understand, the American Indians were here first, and I understand that there's a deep heritage. I think probably we all would share in that. In my area as well as Minneapolis and St. Paul, before it was Minneapolis and St. Paul. But I think as we look at the makeup of our society, Somali people coming here, for example, and you may represent more of them than I do, although Rochester has a very, very large Somali population, I think, either if not first or second largest in the state. They have such tremendous challenges as it is. I think for them to need to be relate everything to the American Indians might be a challenge and might be something that is maybe not as meaningful to them. I just think as we start picking one area of the melting pot out and highlight that as being the main one and everything relating to that, I fear for what that might lead us, or a path that might lead us down. Another question I would have is, on your amendment, and I can see why you thought maybe it'd lead all, Mr. Chairman, it is pretty extensive. You're deleting references to the standards in Section 3 and I believe in Section 4, let's see, page 4 and page 5. You're deleting references back to the graduation requirements. Representative Clark, why would you be doing that?
Mr. Chairman, let's address the answer to that. We actually did go through and...
Representative Clark.
Mr. Chairman, we did go through and change this to make it, I think, work a little bit better along with some of the recommendations from the commissioner. I'll let Mr. Chairman respond to that.
Ms. Salinas.
Specifically, line 4... excuse me, Mr. Chair.
Representative Demmer.
Thank you. Just for clarification, page 4, line 22, and again on page 5, line 28... deleting references back to the standards on page 3.
Yeah.
A curiosity there. I'm trying to get a line of thought here.
I think our thinking was that if in fact the content is embedded into the standards, that the standards, all students have to meet the standards in order to graduate from high school, so that this additional clause would be unnecessary because you've already embedded the content into the standards.
Representative Demmer, we're doing a little discussion here with counsel about thinking here in terms of I think you're raising a very good point that we may still want to have that reference there regardless.
I'm getting a technical nature to Mr. Chai. And actually, this area doesn't deal with the students, it deals with teachers, referring back to standards. And, maybe it's more of a technical nature than more study. I guess I was trying to reconcile it as I was going through here, and I thought maybe there would be a specific...
So, Representative Demmer, it's absolutely appropriate for you to gauge intent here in terms of how the language is put before us. Ms. Salinas.
Mr. Chair, Representative Demmer, I just wanted to comment on the question that you had posed earlier about, singling out American Indians and why include content there. We would absolutely support what Representative Clark has said in terms of it's very important for everybody in Minnesota to understand and know about the culture of everybody else. However, Native people are unique in this state, and not just because we were the first people here. We have a status that no other group has. We have a political status that was established through treaty with the federal government, and no other group has that status. And a lot of the misunderstanding and misconception about Indian people as nations comes as a lot of the misconceptions about Indian people come because people don't understand the sovereignty issue. Now, that sovereignty issue is unique to us. It's not true of Somalis. It's not true of the Hmong population. It's not true of any other group. So that's a very, very important piece of who we are that gets misunderstood and misconceived all the time. So that's why it's really important to include that. And I would also just add that very recently in Minneapolis, the Minneapolis Public Schools just entered into a memorandum of agreement with the Minneapolis American Indian Community. And the reason that they did that was because they recognized that they need to work more in partnership with the community because of the failure rate of Indian students. So it's the community and the district coming together and say, we really are going to work together with a singular focus on improving educational outcomes for Indian students. But in the process of that 2 years that we talked about this MOA with the school district, the very same issue that you're raising today, well, if we do an MOA with the Indian community, then the Hmong community is going to expect it. And my response was, those communities should expect it. For too long in Minnesota, we have had a certain paradigm of education, a certain curriculum that really no longer matches with the people who live here. If you look at the demographics and the changing demographics, particularly in the urban districts, but increasingly in greater Minnesota, our curriculum, our practice, has to reflect the students coming through the system. And it really doesn't right now. And so this is one step, and it may even prove to be a model for how we can become more responsive in educating children of many different cultures and backgrounds.
Representative Dimmer.
Mr. Chair, and to the witness, in what, with like mathematics, science, and reading, how would you say that it doesn't reflect the children that are there now?
What happens right now when we talk about by and large, what happens when we talk about integrating Indian content into the standard public school curriculum? As Representative Erdahl said, it usually ends up being a unit within a social studies curriculum or within a history curriculum. Now, Indian people, our ancestors, our knowledgeable elders, knew things scientifically and contribute in significant ways to the development of science, but that's not recognized in the curriculum. We contributed as a people in significant ways to understanding of mathematical concepts. That's not recognized in the curriculum. And what we're saying is that if you restrict our contributions to the social studies curriculum and you don't talk about Native people and their contributions anywhere else, then it gives a false impression that that's all we did, when in fact we contributed, as did other cultures, to all of these areas.
Thank you. And members, let me just say, and I think Ms. Farmer framed this up early for us, this is the appropriate policy level discussion. You know, this sort of broadness versus uniqueness, for lack of a better term, and Representative Dimmer, you and I have served together for many years, and I know that the spirit in which your inquiry here is to really rigorous attempt to make sure that we're clear about our policy approach here. And let me just leave it at that, but I think I want to express appreciation for the level of rigor and respect in which we're having this discussion. Member discussion. Members, I do want to move to a vote. We do have a few other bills. It is important for us to move along here. We've got staff that are working on big bills here that we want to get them back to working on. So, Representative Heidrich, and I believe you had a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And more of a clarification, at least for some of the new members here. Presently, we're going through the revision of the standards there. I think right now, probably, you can correct me on this. I think we're going through the language of arts right now. They're going through, and I think math is next, and probably social studies. But wouldn't this be the proper place for this to be heard when they're revisiting the standards? And I'm not sure when social studies is up. I think that would be the proper time. I'm just, if you could help, I'm hoping next year that within your committee, Representative Mariani, we do get some reports of where some of those revisions, revisiting some of the benchmarks and some of those things that we discussed previously in here. I think we need to bring them here, and I think your discussion should be part of the discussion. But Representative Mariani, if you can lighten me a little bit, I'm not really sure where we're at with the revisions right now.
Representative Hagler, I do have a reference here. Of course, the mathematic revisions are almost complete and will be presented to us as a report. So we are going to meet again to receive that report this legislative session. The ARTS revision are scheduled next for implementation in 10-11 school year. The science revisions will be in 08-09 for implementations in 11-12. Language arts in 09-10 for implementation 12-13, and then social studies in 10-11 for implementation in 13-14. Members, is there anyone else who wishes to testify on this bill? Anyone in the audience? Members, if that, the chair will renew his motion that House file, let me get it together here, House file 2008 as amended, be recommended to pass, referred to the Finance Committee with a re-referral to K-12 Finance. All in favor of that motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Clark. Thank you, Dr. Intel, Ms. Salinas. Ms. Palmer, thank you. Representative Clark, we're going to do 2148. I'm going to move House File 2148 be recommended for pass, and I believe that needs to be referred to public...
Back to public health and...
To public health. I hope that's the right name of the committee.
Public health and housing... Policy and finance.
Okay, public health, housing, policy, and finance. Representative Clark, we heard testimony from Ms. Hattie Bonds, from two wonderful testifiers, high school students Cassandra Morgan and Lenora Gray. So I'm hoping that we can do this very quickly here.
Mr. Chair, I think if they talk with you, they
go. I'm sorry, Representative Clark, we do need to amend, offer your amendment to that. So I'm going to move the 044 amendment to House File 2148, and that is a delete everything amendment, and puts a bill in the shape that we should discuss it before us. All in favor of that motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Representative Clark.
Thank you, Mr. Member. I'm glad you got to hear members, the students who brought that bill to me. They initiated it. It was their idea. They sat down with our staff upstairs and came up with the language, and we tweaked it a bit, and what we have left in the bill is a study that will be sponsored through our Minnesota Department of Health to actually look at issues of fragrance sensitivities in our schools and see if we can't come up with some policy. And I think this will be a pilot project, and if they're able to come forward with something that works with our Minneapolis schools, then maybe it can be something that would be available to other schools that would be interested as well.
Wonderful. Other questions for Representative Clark?
No, we're going to let her off easy.
Is there anyone in the audience that wishes to testify on this bill? Mr. Graffal.
Hi.
Welcome to the committee, Mr. Graffal.
Mr. Chair and members, my name is Jim Graffal, Minneapolis Public Schools. I just wanted to put on record what we do have in place right now, and that is every year at the beginning of the year, we have our school nurses do an in-service with staff on fragrant use. We actually work in a collaboration with healthcare providers called the Healthy Learners Board, first attacking the No Shops, No School campaign to get immunizations up to 98%, and moving from there on to asthma. So asthma education prevention has been part of the work we do through our school nurses. So the in-service on fragrance use reduction has been part of our school year, and then two times a year we put out notices in the district-wide hotline that goes out to all staff on fragrance use reduction, and then in addition to that, working with students and families on medication management to help them during the school day to manage their medication around asthma. So it's been a concern, and we're just thought I'd want that on record there.
Mr. Graff, does MPS have a position either way on this bill?
Mr. Chair, and I haven't seen the delete everything amendment. It's not covered. So it's now just a study?
I believe that's correct. Representative Graff.
It's just a study with the Minnesota Department of Health.
Mm-hmm. And Mr. Graffler, with recommendations for an education campaign in MPS, in Minneapolis Public Schools.
Mm-hmm. It's clearly not part of our legislative agenda. We already do some education. I'd be happy to work with the author about that. But at a certain point, I don't know how much fragrance the school board can prevent from entering the Minneapolis Public Schools. But, you know, happy to study the issue and work on improving our efforts around both medication management and fragrance use reduction.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Clark.
One of the things I really like about this bill is that it does put a lot of the power in the hands of students, because I do agree that the teachers and adults and others probably aren't going to be able to deal with the fragrances as well as peers are with each other. So that's one of the real strengths of this bill.
All right. Are there any questions? Representative Welty.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to Representative Clark, I'm just looking at this. It's not a study. It's saying that you're going to put together a commission, or not a commission, but a
working group.
A working group, right, to come up with an educational campaign. So we're not actually going to get any results back on this. You know, I'm wondering, since the issue has been raised, if it would be beneficial to have a school try to implement a pilot project and bring us back the results to let us know if there is a positive impact upon the students and if it can actually be implemented. But with this bill that's before us right now, we're just putting together a working group that's going to develop an education campaign, but what are we going to get back from it?
You know, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Walter, and thank you for the clarification on that. Representative Clark.
Mr. Chairman, I think there was a line in here about reporting back to the legislature. I don't see it in here. And
I don't see it in the amendment.
No, I'd be glad to make sure that gets put back in, Mr. Chairman. That the recommendations about what they find out does come back to the legislature so that it can be
Why don't we do this? We're establishing your intent that there be a study recommendation to come back to the legislature. This will need to stop in this health committee, and
yes, it will.
If you can give us your word that that language will be reinserted there, then we can proceed with that assumption.
Mr. Chairman, I'd be glad to do that, and I can work with Representative Welty to make sure that he's satisfied with it as well.
Are there any other questions for the author? Anyone else wish to testify on this bill? If not, then the chair removes his motion that House File 2148 as amended be recommended to pass and referred to the
Committee on Public Health.
Committee on Public Health.
And Housing Policy and Finance.
Thank you. All in favor of that motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Same sign.
Aye.
Motion prevails.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Clark. Representative Dabney, House File 1694. Representative Dabney moves that House File 1694 be recommended to pass and referred to the Finance Committee, and with a recommendation be referred to K-12 Finance.
That's correct.
All right, I'm doing good.
All right. Members, Mr. Chair, Minnesota has a part-time citizen legislature, and that's something that I've come to value even more in the several sessions that I've been here, because what it means is that folks bring their real lives experiences. Many of us in this committee as educators, but the wide variety of experiences we have of insurance agents and real estate appraisers and whatever all folks do in their real lives, they bring here and bring that expertise. I maybe shouldn't claim expertise here, but this bill does come out of my experience as a teacher. There's an exciting world of technology that has unfolded in the last decade or two. Our students often are ahead of us on it, those of us who are in the classroom. But there's also a lot of opportunity in the classroom for using technology to enhance, to engage, and to move students forward in their understanding. But I know, as my experience in my classroom is, I don't have the understanding of how to integrate some of these technological opportunities into my curriculum. As a geography teacher, I use GIS, Geographic Information Systems, software in my classes. But I know, to my frustration, I don't use them to the fullest extent that they could be used. There's other technology that's available. This year I had my students establish a wiki. I hadn't a clue what I was doing most days. I was making it up as I went along. And, you know, sometimes you get good teaching out of that. But I don't think you get the richest, fullest, and most robust use of the technology and the dollars that that represents, or of the educational opportunity that represents, when there aren't the services available to assist teachers in developing an understanding and appreciation and the skills to actually integrate technology into their classroom. That's the seed of this bill. I've been lucky enough now to work with Professor Aaron Deering from the University of Minnesota, who actually does what I'm looking for a living, and what I'm hoping that we can provide for teachers across the state, assistance in integrating technology into their classrooms. Mr. Chair, Dr. Deering has developed a proposal that I'd like the committee to hear.
Dr. Deering, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record, and I do apologize, but I'm going to ask you to be really brief.
I'll be really brief.
Thank you, Dr. Deering.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Aaron Deering from the University of Minnesota, and I'm excited and commend Representative Dabney for presenting this to you. As a former middle school and high school social studies teacher myself, actually from Rochester, what we have seen is that we are not able to reach the learners by providing the technology to them. This is all about student learning. Recently in Ed Week, Minnesota received the grades of D+, D+, and F when we look at access, use, and the capacity to use technology within the classroom. The reason this is happening is because the technology is not getting to the teachers. The technology is being used for, like, enterprise technologies that are being used by administrators to help function the school. But it has to happen. It has to get to the learners, and it has to get to the teachers. So what we're proposing is to have a professional development approach where we have face-to-face workshops. Now, we know that the one-shot workshop does not work. And so what we're going to do is we would have approximately 10 districts where we have 10 teachers from every single district, and we would meet with them face-to-face in creating these learning communities where they are going to learn about how to integrate content-specific technologies. Like Representative Dabney talks about, the use of GIS or Google Earth within the social studies, that is content-specific. And at the University of Minnesota, we do that for science, we do that for English, we do it for arts, FIAD, and that's what we need in order to support these teachers. In addition to the face-to-face workshop that would take place throughout the entire year, we would also create an online environment to support this. And this is very, very important because the teachers and the students need that support throughout the year. And so not only would we be able to provide them face-to-face assistance, working with them, identifying the problems that they have within their current district, and coming up with solutions on how to effectively integrate technology, but then we're also going to be able to support them in an online environment, not only throughout the year, but throughout their tenure as a teacher within that district. So ultimately what we're going to have then are students who can effectively use the technology that their teachers have taught them how to use within their school district. And the exciting thing about this too is that many of the technologies that are available to us are actually free. So for example, Google Earth as a GIS activity is a free technology. So all we need to do is provide this mechanism to support these teachers throughout the school districts in the state of Minnesota.
Thank you, Dr. Deering, and I love your energy for Friday afternoon.
Hey.
I'm signing up for one of your courses. Are there any questions for Representative Dabney or Dr. Deering?
I have one.
Representative Dietrich.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Dabney, I applaud this effort, and I have two questions. And the first is one is a comment. That is, best practices. I think that this academy could serve very well for teachers to share what is working very well already in other people's classrooms and how they are integrating it. You know, I'm such a proponent of not reinventing the wheel and borrowing other people's innovation and creativity. Does that provide for this?
Representative,
does this provide for that, is I guess what I should say.
Mr. Chair, Representative Dietrich, I think if it pleases the Chair, we'll both take a swipe at that. I think it does. The vision that Dr. Gehring and his colleague, there we go, brought forward was by establishing the online environment, you can be teaching social studies in War Road, I can be teaching social studies in Buffalo, and we can connect in an online environment about what are we doing, how are we doing it, what's working, what's not, what's the person in the next classroom doing, really enriching that experience and sharing that knowledge across the state. I think Dr. Gehring has...
Yeah, absolutely.
Dr. Gehring, briefly, please.
Thank you. I think not only will we provide this database of best practices that teachers are using throughout the entire state, but also we are going to then, I forgot to mention this, we're going to make these teachers teacher researchers that are going to be teacher leaders. So now they're going to be taught through this academy, and now they will go into their district and throughout to teach the other teachers on how to effectively do this. So yes, there will be a database of best practices within the online environment, and there's already been a great deal of discussion on how to design an effective online environment to support these teachers that can be used for in-service, actually pre-service teachers also.
And
my
second question is, you know, we have invested so much time and energy into talking about training and retraining teachers, which is very valuable, you know, very much needed. But I think that at some point we need some guarantees that our teachers are going to come out of their four-year degree or better with some of these skills, because otherwise you're trying to make up for, you know, for the not integrating it throughout their education all this time. And you know what it's like being a teacher. You are overworked, and there's just not enough hours in the day. So to have this be an extension instead of an add-on, and at some point I just feel like we need some sort of guarantees that these things are being thoroughly covered and trained in their higher education experience.
Good point. Thank you. Are there any other Representative Detmer and then Representative Verdal?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And there's no fiscal note here, but the schools across the state have staff development money already in place, you know, 2%. So wouldn't that be a good place to have this program, is within the staff development already established in our schools?
Representative Detmer. Mr. Chair, Representative Detmer, I don't think it would be. For one thing, we need to recall that under statute, the staff development monies are under the authority of the site, and I don't think it would be appropriate for the legislature to step in and say, you must, when we've granted them the autonomy to develop their own goals and fund those. Secondly, my belief, from my experience, is that what's missing in the equation here is an expertise as a resource. The university has the expertise and has a larger context that they can work from. If it's me and the guy in the next classroom, we'll do okay, but it doesn't provide the added dimensions that an appropriation like this and the creation of an academy like this would do for all the teachers and the students in the state.
Representative Dabney, I'm also reminded that we're hearing that in some districts teachers have forgone staff development funds because of financial stresses on their districts.
I recognize that as well. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Vidal. And then we're going to vote, members.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll be brief. I think, Representative Dabney, it's important to develop teacher expertise in technology. Basically, I was trained by seventh graders. I think there must have been a better way to do it. I was waiting for that one.
I have to have his vote here in a minute, so it was better that the Demers said that.
Mr. Rudolph, you left yourself open. But,
All right, members, is there anyone else who wishes to testify on this bill? If not, the Representative Dabney renews his motion that House File 1694, we did not amend it, right? House File 1694 be recommended to pass and referred to Finance Committee with a referral to the K-12 Finance. All in favor of that motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails.
Thank you,
Dr. Dabney. Thank you, Dr. Dearing.
Thank you.
Representative Benson, our last bill for today.
Last
for the session, frankly, because of our deadline here. Representative Benson moves that House File 1853 be recommended to pass and referred to Finance with a re-referral to K-12 Finance. And Representative Benson also moves the DE1 amendment, which is a delete everything amendment. Members, we're going to vote to put the bill up before us the way the author wants it to be before us. So all in favor of the DE1 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Your bill is amended before us. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You were very kind to allow us to present this bill. It's going to be very, very fast, so I will retain your good graces, hopefully. The objective of this bill came as a result of a number of parents in my district and other districts who have been working with classroom teachers K-3, K-6, who had indicated some frustration in skills in identifying young people early enough so that we could do something about the increasing enrollment in special education. Since this bill was formed, I've had a wonderful discussion with Karen Balmer here from the Minnesota Board of Teaching, and really what I'm trying to do is just have this bill as a placeholder, in a sense. And I had hoped that Representative Erickson had been here today, because I have been railing against directives from the state onto local districts and so, and here we have a flagrant violation. I will turn it over to Ms. Balmer here for a moment, and she maybe can explain where we are in this process and how we're all working cooperatively together.
Ms. Palmer, welcome back.
Thank you. Again, my name is Karen Balmer, Minnesota Board of Teaching. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Representative Benson, thank you. Briefly, first and foremost, you need to know that the Board of Teaching recognizes that this is a very real need. Preparation for all teachers in Minnesota needs to be stronger in the area of reading. We, in fact, recognized and identified that need just several months ago before even this legislation was arrived on the scene. We had the Board authorized the establishment of a task force to look at this. And, in fact, that task force has been convened. We have stakeholders from higher education institutions, representation from Education Minnesota for the teachers, literacy and reading stakeholder group from across Minnesota. In fact, I've got a couple of the members of that task force here with me. Should you have questions, they're here, as well as some of the parents that Representative Benson referenced, a couple board members from the Minnesota Association of Reading, Reading Association, and so they're here. But I want you to know that this is something that the board has identified. We will be moving this group along the recommendations that will be received by the board, at least preliminary recommendations in May. We believe that what will come out of this group, given its composition and the strong membership, will be, in fact, comprehensive than what we can even accomplish in this bill. Mm-hmm. So I just want to make you aware of that and would stand for any questions.
Are there any questions for Ms. Palmer? Representative Heidegger.
Yes, I have a question for Representative Benson. Line 2.16 and 2.15, the requirement that teacher licensure candidates demonstrate their knowledge and awareness of language structure. Does that mean that Representative Erdahl would have to diagram the sentence?
It would most certainly mean that. And by the way, I want Representative you to know that I have a major in language arts as well as social sciences, and I have done a lot of sentence diagramming in my life, and I would be more than happy to help Representative Erdahl in this area.
Representative Erdahl.
Make it a short sentence, please.
Is there anyone in the audience that wishes to testify on this bill? Are there any further questions? If not, then Representative Benson renews his motion that House File 1853 as amended be recommended to pass and refer to Finance Committee with a three referrals to the K-12 Finance Committee. All in favor of that motion say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Thank you very much, Representative Johnson. Members, this is our last, deadlines get changed, this is our last meeting to actually move legislation in this legislative session, but hang on to your seats because the session is never over until it's over, right? But I do want, I do expect us to get back together before the end of session. There are some reports, particularly those science and math reports from the department that I think it's important for us to do due diligence in hearing and reviewing. I also want us to have a discussion about working group activity during the interim. It's my hope and my goal to keep as many of you engaged who wish to be engaged throughout the interim period, working on issues. I'm particularly interested in how we began this session in terms of discussing our standards, our assessments, our types of assessments that are used, issues related to our report card mechanism, how we measure our scores, and so, but you also may have some other ideas of things that we could be working on and prepare ourselves for the next legislative session. And I also would like us to spend some time just as a group, as a committee, really assessing our work this year, what we to look at the things that perhaps we had thought we would get to that we didn't get to. There were a number of bills referred to this committee. I have gotten flack from both sides of the aisle for not hearing our bills. I think I've been an equal opportunity rejecter in that regard. But of course, these bills are still alive for our next legislative session. So just a good, honest assessment among ourselves in terms of how we did our work this year. And of course, part of doing assessments is so that we can do our work better next year. So, Representative Dover.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And if I might add, I think, well, first a question. Will we be meeting again just based on you sending out an email and say we're going to have a meeting?
That's correct, Representative Dover. And it gets tricky here from here on out. So hopefully I'll find a time in which we can all do that. But yes, that's correct. We won't have the standing schedule anymore.
Handles. And then I might add, Mr. Chair, I don't know what sort of budget you have, but field trips are good, and I am serious about that. I think it's good to go out. We did a couple, and I would encourage you to find places we can go that make fiscal sense but still get us out and about, because I think as was stated earlier, I think that when we get out and get a chance to interact with people on a real basis, it makes a lot of sense.
I agree with Senator. Well, thank you, members, for your work on this session. We look for a notice from us for at least one more hearing. And until then, this meeting is adjourned.